You're listening to the DolphinsTalk.com Podcast Network.
DolphinsTalk.com Point After.
This is DolphinsTalk.com Point After, episode number 2. My name is Josh Couture. Thank you for tuning in, and I have a busy show lined up for you today because we're going to talk about everything that happened at the mandatory minicamp. That includes the Jerome Baker extension. That includes Tua Tagovailoa and that now infamous practice that will be preserved forever on Twitter. And what exactly is going on with Xavien Howard? Seems as though he's holding out, like we talked about on the last episode. So we're going to continue that conversation on this one. Also, later on in the program, I'm going to be joined by Justin Dunk. He is a Canadian football sports reporter, sports anchor. You can find him on 3 Down Nation. You can also find him on Twitter at jdunk12. And we're going to talk about Javon Holland. Now, if you didn't know, Javon Holland is Canadian. So I sought the experience, the expertise of a Canadian broadcaster to tell me more about this safety that seems to be very popular in camp right now, and is probably going to be the starting safety for the Miami Dolphins in the 2021 season. We're also going to talk about Cameron Wake, Ricky Williams, some Dolphins that tried their hand at the CFL. One was rather successful and one wasn't. So we'll get to that interview in just a bit. Let's talk about minicamp. Let's talk about that mandatory minicamp. And it started off with all positive vibes. All right. We knew going into this, a couple of guys were seeking contract extensions. And Brian Flores and Chris Greer, man, they've been giving out contract extensions like Tic Tacs. Who wants a contract extension? Everybody's been getting contract extensions. Since 2019, they've handed out 11 contract extensions. So they're not being frugal with the players that are currently on their roster. And Jerome Baker was the latest to receive his contract extension. 3 years, $39 million, which is very favorable. 28.4 of it is guaranteed. Not bad for a guy taken in the third round back in 2018. Since joining the Miami Dolphins, he has appeared in 48 games, started 37 of them, and has amassed 311 career tackles, 11 and a half sacks, 2 interceptions, 10 passes defended, and 4 forced fumbles. And he's only 24 years old. And you're probably wondering, all right, he's 24, 3 years? Well, that doesn't seem like a lot of term. You would expect someone of that age, 5 years, 6 years. Why only 3? Well, either this was a negotiation tactic by Jerome Baker's agent or Chris Greer to keep the term low with the hope that the salary cap goes up in the next few years. With the reports being the salary cap getting upwards of $250 million over the next handful of years, a guy like Jerome Baker, who will only be 27 years old when this contract is over, maybe gets a Pro Bowl or two, maybe gets a couple playoff wins, well, he can definitely cash out big time on his next contract. He can get that 5-year deal. But that 5-year deal, who knows what it could be worth? Who knows what players are going to be getting paid in the year 2025 or 2026. Like I said, with the salary cap ballooning at some point, who knows when, but it's going to be within the next handful of years, guys are going to get paid. And I think Chris Greer is just setting himself up where he has some wiggle room in the next few years. He's got a good base of a team. He's got guys on expiring deals or short-term deals. He can kind of play around with that. He's still got Tua on that rookie contract. We'll talk about Tua later on. So he's building something for the short term while keeping his eye on what's going to go on in the future. I think this is a great move, but what does that mean for the next contract extension? There's a guy by the name of Mike Gesicki who I'm sure is looking for one. And it might be something along the same lines. 3 years, $39 million. I don't think Chris Greer is really interested in handing out term right now. Yes, he is the undeniable number one tight end on this team. But there are guys on the depth chart behind him who by next year could be making a real push for that starter's job. Like, we don't know what Hunter Long necessarily will be, But a lot of scouts, a lot of quote-unquote experts were very high on him. Jabri Blount, he's a guy you got to keep an eye out on. Yeah, he doesn't know how to play the position just yet, but there's a history of basketball players that convert to tight end who become rather successful in the NFL. I talked about it last episode, and I'm going to reiterate it again. Jabri Blount might not be ready this year. Hunter Long might not be ready this year. But if they stay on the team, if they stay on the roster, obviously Hunter Long will be there, but Jabri Blount, who knows? But if they make it through their first seasons, they pick up the offense, they learn something, they could be pivotal players on the offense in year two of their careers. So yeah, I'm not super confident that Mike Gesicki is going to get a deal, but if he does, I think it's going to be another one of those three-year contracts. Keep the term low because you got a lot of youth and a lot of players on your depth chart at the tight end position with high potential. Just don't sleep on Jabri Blount. Just something about it screams to me Antonio Gates. Maybe not the same career, even if it's a fraction of that. Pretty good deal. All right, so we got to talk about Tua and this practice. So on Tuesday, June the 15th, is a date that will live in infamy for the Miami Dolphins. Either we're going to look at it as, you know, the moment he turned everything around or the beginning of the end. Because Tua lined up under center for a real practice in the rain. Yes, the elements were not ideal. But he lined up under center in the rain with this new offense and threw five picks. Five interceptions in practice. You better believe Twitter was having a field day about this. If you were a Tua hater, well, it just reaffirmed your feelings and your suspicions. If you were a Tua fan, well, you were ripping your hair out having to defend this player that the Dolphins took number five overall in the draft. So what does a five interception practice really mean? Well, it means a couple of things. First off, it means he had a bad day. It means he had trouble reading defenses. It means the defense was giving him a hard time, and you can only go one way, and that is upwards. Because I don't think it's getting much worse than a five-interception practice. Now, is that Tua being poor at his job, or is it the defense is just that good? I think it was a little bit of both. There are going to be growing pains with this offense. Another new offensive coordinators, a lot of new players, a lot of new faces. You're trying to build rapport with the guys on the team. You really didn't get to have a proper camp last year because you're recovering from your hip surgery. And you even admitted, I really didn't know the playbook that well. Like, I knew it, but not as well as I should have. It's not that Tua didn't study properly. It's just he was working on a couple of things. He was trying to figure out the playbook while trying to fix a hip where if he got that injury 20, 30 years ago, he'd have to retire from football. And it's just one practice. On the Green Bay side of things, we heard that Jordan Love had a terrible practice and then the next day was throwing darts. You're going to have bad practices, especially in mini camps, especially in training camp, as you're developing with the team. A lot of new faces, like I said. A lot of new numbers and names on the back of the jerseys. You have to build trust. You have to build rapport. And yeah, there's going to be some hiccups along the way, aka a five-interception practice. Is there cause for concern? No. The narrative that was bothering me about the whole thing, if you're kind of following it on Twitter, was the excuses. Well, what kind of interceptions were they? Were they tipped balls? You know, guys running the wrong routes? That shouldn't matter. In an NFL regular season game, five interceptions is five interceptions. They don't take one away if Mike Gesicki tipped the ball to another guy. They don't take one away if Devontae Parker ran the wrong route. They're still interceptions. They still count the same. And even if you want to use the excuse of, well, what kind were they? Well, let's say two of them weren't his fault. That's still three interceptions. You can't have three interceptions in a game either and expect to win. But I just chalk it up to being the growing pains of training camp. You're trying to figure stuff out. You got two new offensive coordinators, a lot of new players, trying to figure things out. And let's be honest, the magnifying glass is tight on Tua. Everyone is paying attention to every move he makes. Every success, every failure is going to be documented on social media because it is the biggest story going into this season for the Miami Dolphins. What will Tua be in year two? Will he take the next step, or will he stay where he was? And if he doesn't figure it out, they'll find someone else who can. They have the draft capital. They have the ammunition. And they might have more draft capital coming in the near future, thanks to Xavien Howard. The Pro Bowl, All-Pro, All-World cornerback sat out of mandatory minicamp because he is seeking a contract extension after signing a new one last season. Last season, 5 years, $75 million, $39 million guaranteed, and, you know, 39 and change. Average annual salary of $15 million. Dolphins could cut Xavien Howard next season. It's only a dead cap hit of $2.8 million. So they have an out, and I don't think they want the out because he played pretty good last season. But Xavien Howard wants a new contract. And at the time of him signing that deal, highest paid cornerback in the NFL. The only problem is, literally, they signed the new deal, and then they signed Byron Jones to a 5-year, $82.5 million contract, $54 million guaranteed, and a base salary of $16.5 million. So Byron Jones gets $7 million more on his deal total. He gets $15 million more guaranteed, and his base salary is $1.5 million more than Xavien Howard. Well, Xavien Howard was the best corner in the NFL last year. A real consideration for Defensive Player of the Year. Like a real consideration. Was that because of Byron Jones? Byron Jones' career hasn't resulted in a lot of interceptions. It's resulted in him shutting down a side of the field and the other cornerback benefiting off of that. Because he takes away one side of the field and your other cornerback has to make the plays. And Xavien Howard made the plays because scouting reports say don't throw to Byron Jones' side when he was in the lineup. Was last season a result of Byron Jones being on the other side of the field? Who really knows? At the end of the day, Xavien Howard led the league in interceptions and was the best cornerback in the NFL by far. And now he wants another contract extension. And we talked about this last episode. You do not want to open up Pandora's box with this. You do not want to set this precedent for other players on your roster. Jerome Baker just re-signed, right? He signed a 3-year deal, $39 million. Let's say he goes and has a bonker season. Over 100 tackles, a couple picks, a few forced fumbles, a couple of sacks. Consideration for Defensive Player of the Year. Well, is he going to go into Chris Greer's office and want a contract extension after just signing one? Because Xavien Howard got to do the same thing. It's a bad precedent to start. Are you going to allow a guy to hold your team hostage because he signed a contract that was at market value when you signed it, but has now seen three other guys get paid more than him, even though statistically he's had better years than all of them? And that's why I think the only way this gets resolved is by dealing your Pro Bowl cornerback, as tough as that is. How can you justify re-signing him? Well, obviously you can justify it by saying, well, he deserves a pay increase because he excelled at his job. In any field of employment, if you are very good at your job, you usually get paid for it, but not all the time. And if they decide to re-sign, to restructure Xavien Howard's contract, you're opening up a can of worms that you don't want. And if this team is run any way like the New England Patriots has been, you can bet on it that Xavien Howard's getting dealt. If B-Flow is anything like Bill Belichick, or if B-Flow's learned anything by being around Bill Belichick, the player isn't greater than the team. And if Xavien Howard wants a new contract, he can go get one somewhere else. And that just begs the question, what is he worth? Laremy Tunsil and Kenny Stills got you 2 first-round picks in 2 seconds. DeAndre Hopkins and Julio Jones, both future Hall of Famers, netted second-rounders and extras. So what's the market value for Xavien Howard right now? You got a first for Minkah Fitzpatrick, and that was just based on potential and where he got drafted and how his first year went. I think if Xavien Howard is on the open market right now, a team like the Atlanta Falcons, who are in desperate need of a shutdown corner and who are clearly still in it to win it because they kept Matt Ryan, does that net you a first and a bit? Yeah, they have some salary cap issues, but for a player like Xavien Howard, you figure it out. Just like how the Tennessee Titans, for a player like Julio Jones, they figured it out. You move some things here and there, you make it work. If I wake up tomorrow and find out that Xavien Howard's been traded for a first this year, maybe like a third the year after, and maybe like a six this year. I'm not going to be mad about it. I'm not happy about it because he's great, but that's a great return. You still have McCourty on your roster. You got Coleman on your roster. You have Igbinoghene in his second year. You have Nick Needham, who apparently is doing pretty good at minicamp right now. And then you have that draft capital where if Tua does not succeed, you can call Houston up on the phone and find out what it's going to take to get Deshaun Watson. Or you can tinker around the draft board like you did this year, move up, move down, and maybe grab yourself a quarterback. But this Xavien Howard situation, how it ends, I really do think it affects the Tua situation. Because if Miami's armed with more draft capital, it makes that target on Tua much larger. If he doesn't figure it out, the Dolphins can easily make the switch because they have that draft capital. And if losing Xavien Howard is what ends up happening, so be it. It's how the sport works. Sometimes you lose a player that you like. Sometimes you lose a good player. Heck, Jason Taylor left and went to go play for Washington. And then he came back and then left again and went and played for the Jets. It happens. It's how the sport works. Patrick Surtain left, went to Kansas City. Sometimes great players don't spend their entire careers in one spot. And Xavien Howard's value has never been higher. He's 28 years old. You know, once you reach 30, that's when you kind of start to decline. Do the Dolphins want to go in there and sign him to another five-year deal? Six-year deal? You know, what exactly is it that he wants? He obviously wants more money, but what does that look like? But his value's never been higher. And if a team desperately needs a cornerback, they might pay the price to get one of the best. Coming up, we're going to talk to Justin Dunk. He is a Canadian football sports reporter, sports anchor. He works for Three Down Nation. We're going to talk about Javon Holland. We're going to talk about Ricky Williams. We're going to talk about Cameron Wake. So stay tuned. Now a word from our sponsor. Summer's coming, so are you ready to unveil your beach bod? Well, you're in luck because our friends at Manscaped just launched their fourth generation performance package, which includes the Lawnmower 4.0. You heard that right. The 4.0. Complement your dad bod or six pack with a trim from the leaders in male grooming. The sun is shining and calling your name, fellas. So join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped and get ready for hot guy summer with 20% off plus free shipping by going to manscaped.com/dolphinstalk. Now let's talk about this performance package 4.0. Inside of it, you'll find their Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, like I mentioned, the Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, Crop Preserver ball deodorant, Crop Reviver toner, performance boxer briefs, and a travel bag to hold all of those goodies in. Now, also, did I mention that the Lawnmower 4.0 is waterproof too? So in the shower or in the wild, and from your chest pubes all the way down to your ball fro, the Lawnmower 4.0 is the best trimmer for you. And like I mentioned, Manscaped threw in two free gifts to their Performance Package 4.0, the Manscaped Boxers and the Shed Travel Bag. So bring your comfort and boxers to another level. Get 20% off plus free shipping by going to manscaped.com/dolphinstalk. That's 20% off plus free shipping by going to manscaped.com/dolphinstalk. Dolphins talk. Escape the shrubs and the weeds this summer and shine with Manscaped. You're listening to DolphinsTalk.com. Point After. Joining me on the show right now is a sports anchor and reporter. You can see some of his work on Three Down Nation, which is a Canadian football publication. He also played a little QB on top of that. And you can find him on Twitter at JDunk12. Justin Dunk, what's going on, man?
Chilling, man. Happy to be on Dolphins Talk. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. Thanks for being on the show today. And let's get right to it. Let's talk about the Dolphins. The big reason I wanted to have you on is because you follow Canadian football and Three Down Nation focuses on Canadian football players, both in the NCAA and in the NFL. And there is a Canadian on the Miami Dolphins roster right now. And it also seems as though he is making some noise while in camp after spending an early second round pick on Javon Holland. The Dolphins felt he could step up right away and become a contributor, even going as far as cutting one of their captains in Bobby McCain. Now, looking at your website, Three Down Nation, they posted an article back in 2019 naming him part of the All-Canadian team. So I just wanted to get your initial thoughts on Javon Holland and what you thought about him in college and now going into the NFL.
first of all, a versatile cover guy that just jumps off the page athletically. There were some rumors in terms of scouts that I talked to on both sides of the border, because CFL evaluates all the Canadian prospects because of the CFL draft. So they're talking to NFL scouts a lot of the times, trying to get a feel, okay, how much work do I need to do on this guy? Because is he going to go high in the NFL draft? And some people thought if he actually played in 2020 at the University of Oregon, that out through the pandemic, of course, that he could have been a first round pick. So I really get the sense that the Dolphins feel fortunate for him to fall into the second round where they got him, because Holland is versatile. He's got leadership traits on the back end. And obviously you need to make it in the NFL, but it's super athletic, and the ball skills, I think, are something that stand out. So it makes sense to me that they would invest so much draft capital and then look to release a veteran, because I think Holland can contribute pretty soon.
It's very evident that the Dolphins are building their team through the defense, and spending an early second rounder on a safety proves that even more. The Dolphins aren't lacking for talent in the defensive backfield. Hell, they got two of the four highest paid corners in the NFL on the roster. But Holland is a physical specimen, looking like an NFL player on day one. I could never imagine lining up against a guy like him, and he is only 21 years old.
Same, man. I mean, 6'1", 6'1", 207, well built. And like you said, man, I think B-Flo's raved about him down there. And he's got all these traits that you look at, 4.46 in the 40, 4.1 shuttle. So he's got the quickness. Obviously, the 40 time helps you with the range. 35.5-inch vert for a guy that's like 6 feet tall. Like, he's easily dunking in basketball with that. 10'6" broad. And he reps 225 19 times. So I think overall, physically, he's got the package, and then he translates that onto the football field.
What does it say about a player's talent, and specifically Javon Holland's talent, that he could sit out of his junior season in college, only have 2 years under his belt, and still get selected as high as he did?
To me, it says that the Dolphins feel like he has elite skills, and maybe some of the other teams, because I remember after, on the video conference calls, I believe it was, with B-Flo, that they were talking about some of the other teams calling and say, hey, nice pick. We thought he was maybe spy to us. And that was really only largely because he didn't play. So you have 31 NFL teams show up at your pro day. There was a couple of general managers there. Clearly the interest was there in Holland, but some people that held against him that he didn't play. So I think it really shows that he's got these elite skills that he could contribute quickly. A lot of people think, oh yeah, the first round picks are going to come in here, play soon, and maybe some of the later round guys are going to have to come along a little slower, let's say. But I think you can count Holland as a first rounder who should be a guy that's a guy that can contribute on special teams right away, if not potentially start. You mentioned the release of Bobby McCain.
Now, some Dolphins fans might not know this, but Javon's father spent some time in the CFL. Are there any parallels you can see between the two of them? His father, John Holland, had an 8-interception season in the CFL and overall had a pretty decent career. So is there any way you can kind of see similarities between the two of them?
And Holland, his father, Robert, was with the San Francisco 49ers in the NFL too. So he kind of bounced between the leagues a little bit, let's say. But we've seen this over the years where CFL players come up here, and whether they have kids here and stay here, or whether they have kids here and move back to the States, it seems like more and more have offspring that are even more talented. So I think Robert Holland gives him a solid base of genes for Javon Holland to base it off of. And you see them kind of similar in terms of their build, but the game back then was more about being physical as a defensive back, because there wasn't as much passing as we see, you know, especially even in the NFL these days, let alone the CFL. So I really think that Holland is sort of a new age of the Holland family, that he's a guy that's versatile, can run around in the back end, has the ball skills, maybe not the thumper that his dad was, but overall has a great big.
You have to assume Robert taught Javon a little bit about having an edge when he's out there on the field, right? Football, obviously, a much different sport than it was when Robert played, but he definitely had to have gotten Javon's ear every now and again and let him know that he could turn it loose. You know, pop someone one good one and let him know that you're there.
Exactly. When these guys are around the pro, by these guys, I mean sons and the offspring, they pick that up quickly. They realize there's an intensity level that you have to have to play at the pro level. Otherwise, you're just never going to get there. And even play, obviously, high-level NCAA football competition, the second you step on the field, you better be ready to go or you're going to get run over. So you can see that in Javon Holland. And he's got this quiet confidence about him. You can tell that, you know, the rookie minicamp or now some that he's gone through, the mandatory minicamp or getting a training camp, really have not overwhelmed him. And when B-Flow, who you know, really careful with his words, is raving about a player, that it's warranted. He just doesn't give that out to anybody.
Most NFL fans don't really pay attention to what's going on north of the border in the CFL, but Dolphins fans are aware, or maybe not, we'll see, that Cameron Wake spent some time with the BC Lions and won back-to-back Defensive Player of the Year awards before he signed with Miami. Now, you know just as well as I do that if you're successful in the CFL, and I mean you are by far and away the best at your position, you can parlay that into some kind of success in the NFL. Players like Doug Flutie, Jeff Garcia, and Warren Moon all achieved success in the CFL before heading to the NFL and finishing up their careers quite well. So why is the CFL a good proving ground for guys who may have been overlooked?
I think it's ideal because there's only so many jobs in the NFL, right? And obviously everyone views it as the highest level of football, and it is for the American version, certainly. But I think what the CFL offers is some of those guys who maybe don't meet the measurables in whatever capacity that is. Maybe they're a little too short. Maybe they're not quite big enough for their position because the NFL has all of these different molds that they want players to fit into. In the past, I think that's certainly evolving, but you know, BC Lions head coach right now, Rick Campbell, the son of a famous coach up here, Hugh Campbell, said just a few weeks ago, he feels like if this was 10 or 15 years ago, the guys like Lamar Jackson or Russell Wilson would be playing in the CFL because they just weren't getting that kind of respect for their talent. And it was because it was very unique. So they come up to the CFL and for whatever reason, haven't gotten that opportunity. And maybe it's just the timing. Maybe they weren't in the right place at the right time to get that opportunity, because I think a lot of that matters. So they come up to the CFL and it's a high caliber of football. Like, we have players up here who starred in the NCAA and then also guys from those schools in Division I or Division I AA or what have you, that just get an opportunity to play and end up running with it. And you mentioned Cam Wake. When guys come up here and show they can dominate consistently, game in, game out, and for multiple seasons in some cases, and Wake was that they can compete with anyone, because we're just talking about talent. And when those guys get to that level, they certainly deserve an opportunity in the NFL. The one, maybe two guys that I can't understand how they're not in the NFL right now for all the NFL fans that are down there is Bo Levi Mitchell, the quarterback of the Calgary Stampeders, has won two Grey Cups, two CFL Most Outstanding Player Awards, our MVP award, let's say, for the CFL. He had a bunch of tryouts, went on tour, and was kind of close to signing with the Minnesota Vikings, but they told him they didn't want competition for Kirk Cousins. So that turned Bo Levi Mitchell off. The other, to me, is Willie Jefferson, the reigning CFL Most Outstanding Defensive Player, an absolute freak. He was with Houston, kind of bounced around a little bit in the NFL, but as a guy that you would look at and be like, oh my God, like, he's on that freakish level of some of the pass rushers that we've seen of late, like, let's say, a Von Miller in the NFL. So there's guys up here that for whatever reason fall through the cracks. Maybe they have something in their background that's not ideal and they end up here. But if they dominate, they go, looks down there. One that's on the Dolphins right now, Sam McGlavin, had one standout dominant season in the CFL that led to him getting a contract with the Dolphins. He worked out for a bunch of teams, ends up in Miami, and has become a core special teamer there.
It's pretty crazy when you think about the opposite end of that. And what I mean by that is there are players who were in the NFL, it just couldn't seem to make it work. A name that jumps to my mind is Brandon Banks, who was just a returner in the NFL for Washington, but moved on to the CFL. He now plays for the Hamilton Tiger Cats and is regarded as the best wide receiver in the entire league. He's basically like the Tyreek Hill of the CFL. He wins MVPs, he gets paid, and he's basically turned into a team and organization legend and even a CFL icon at this point. The irony is the skills he has now would translate into today's NFL, but he just couldn't seem to get the right opportunity.
Yeah, and that's the difference, man. And you kind of hit on it there that I was talking about earlier is just one, the opportunity, two, the timing, and three, being used properly. Even when Brandon Banks first came to Hamilton and was with the Ticats, the head coach and GM at the time was Ken Austin. He really wanted to focus Banks on being a returner, right? You know this well, Josh. But when June Jones came there, a name that I think a lot of your American listeners will know, a former head coach in the NFL and the CFL, he saw that ability as a receiver, sticks Banks out there, and Banks had 1,000 yards in something like 10 or 11 games to end the season. And then ever since, it's like he's putting up 1,000 yards. He's winning the CFL MLP award again. Equivalent to the NFL MVP award in our league up here. He's taking kicks back to the house. Now, he's used more sparingly as a returner, but I think it speaks to that overall point I was making earlier about you said when guys come up to the CFL, go down and have success in the NFL, like a Cam Wake, who Dolphins fans will know as one of those players, that it can work in reverse too. And it's largely out of the player's control in some ways because there's only so many reps to go around in training camp in the NFL. Even though you have 32 teams and 53-man active rosters and expanded practice rosters now because of COVID-19, but still, there's only so many jobs. And the fact that these guys can come up here and at least get a chance to get on a CFL field, again, there's only so many jobs up here. There's only 9 teams up here. So pro football jobs are just so small that you got to do what you can with that opportunity. And maybe if it doesn't happen in an NFL training camp, you shine on the CFL field because it's wider and longer and a different style of game.
So we have players that go to the CFL and have success in the NFL afterwards. And then we have guys who can't seem to make it work in the NFL, go on to the CFL and find success. But what about the guys who were big name NFL players that moved to the CFL and the career just doesn't work out? Names that come to my mind are, of course, Ricky Williams, who had a cup of coffee with the Toronto Argonauts, and more recently, Johnny Manziel, who spent some time with the Hamilton Tiger Cats and the Montreal Alouettes. There is a long history of successful NFL guys who try to resurrect their careers in the CFL, and it just doesn't work out. Why do you think that happens?
To me, the easy answer, this is what a lot of people say, and I'm not necessarily going to agree with it, but those players come up here and they think they're just going to dominate, right? I think Johnny Manziel was very much in that mold where, yeah, he failed out of the NFL, but in the NFL, it's very much 24/7, 365, right? CFL is a little different. Their workday in terms of their collective bargaining agreement is only supposed to be about half a day long. So after that, it's up to them. If they want to stay longer, that's totally up to them. So I think Manziel thought, hey, I could do the same thing I did at Texas A&M, right? I can go out and party. I can come in. I can practice. I can throw the ball around a little bit. May or may not know the playbook intricately, but my athleticism will get away with it. But that's not the case up here because these guys have been playing this game even though it's a wider field. So I think Manziel is a little unique. You mentioned Ricky Williams. I think it's tricky for a running back who in that day and age was, you know, a thicker guy and more built for the NFL rushing style. Doesn't fit in the CFL. You need to be more of a slasher. You've got to be real fluid coming out of the backfield, catching the football. Another guy recently that people might know, Trent Richardson, right? Was a finalist for the Heisman at the University of Alabama. He was a high pick with the Cleveland Browns too, I believe, fourth overall. Comes up here to Saskatchewan. He was solid. He didn't get a lot of play time, but still, they're not setting it on fire like people expect them because the level of play is really high. And that, I think, is a nice sort of dovetail for our conversation that guys from the CFL that have success can go down to the NFL and have success because that level of play is really high in the CFL, especially at the top.
So the last thing before we go, you played a little bit of quarterback in university, so I figured you could give an expert opinion on this subject. I posted on DolphinsTalk.com's Point After poll on my Twitter asking fans, all things being equal, who would you want as the Dolphins starting quarterback for the next 3 years? The choices were Tua, obviously, Justin Herbert, who the Dolphins could have drafted, Aaron Rodgers, who seems to be wanting out of Green Bay, and Deshaun Watson, who the Dolphins have been linked to since the end of the season. So what say you? Who is your pick?
Yeah, to me, I mean, I'm going to go off what we know, okay? You said all things being equal, so we don't have to necessarily trade a bunch of picks or whatever to get Aaron Rodgers or Deshaun Watson. To me, it comes down to two guys. Justin Herbert or Deshaun Watson. And that's because I'm thinking for the long term, right, of my franchise. So I think right now, And again, we know this, right? Watson has these issues that I would go with Justin Herbert. I know it's one season. Some people might not think he can do it again, but I'm willing to roll the dice that he can. And I really think what he did was special. It came out of nowhere for a lot of people, but it seems to me, and people get oohed and awed by the big arm and the physical frame of some of these guys, which Justin Herbert certainly has. But what stands out to me with him is his timing. And we've seen what Tom Brady's been able to do over the years with not the strongest arm. And we see that picture from the combine, like every Super Bowl that he goes to, where he's looking like a bit of a doughboy, to say the least, that Herbert, to me, has that timing. Brady understands it. The great ones just have it. Obviously, Peyton Manning, you can go on down the list. Dan Marino, for Dolphins fans, know what that means. The timing to fit that ball in there, not gun it in there, but knowing when to cut it loose and anticipation. I think he has that in spades. So for me, I don't want to upset a lot of Dolphins fans after they drafted all that or put all that draft capital into Tua, but I'd go with Herbert.
Yeah, I wasn't on the Herbert train going into the draft because, you know, I was all in on Tua. But it's really tough to watch what Herbert did under those circumstances. You know, Tyrod Taylor gets the needle in the chest, punctures the lung, and, you know, Herbert just has to start against the best team in the NFL and, of course, does pretty good. That's just Dolphins luck when it comes to quarterbacks.
Yeah.
All right, man, I appreciate you coming on this show, and I hope to have you on again.
You bet, Josh. Appreciate you.
That's another episode done. And if you want to check out more stuff from Justin Dunk, you can find him on Twitter at jdunk12 or read his pieces on 3 Down Nation. You can also find me on Twitter at Couture on Air. I'll talk to you later.